there's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The Volume.
It's Boxing with Chris Mannix, presented by FanDuel. Football season is underway. Basketball is right around the corner, and there is no better place to get in on that action than FanDuel. The app is safe, secure, and easy to use. FanDuel always has exclusive offers. When you win, you'll get paid fast. FanDuel has a lot of ways to play, like the spread, money line, over-unders, team totals, player props, and so much more. Jump into the action at any time during the game with live betting. Combine multiple bets from the same game in a same game parlay and try out the same game parlay plus. So use the promo code BOXING and download the FanDuel app today to make every moment more during this football season. And get ready, NBA season is right around the corner.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Or somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right. I'm going to be in a bad mood. Kevin Ioli is here, Yahoo Sports. Jamel Herring, the former 130-pound champion ESPN broadcaster. There's a lot of good things I want to talk about in boxing, fellas, but like I've had one of those days. I'm recording this on Thursday afternoon, and my optimism for Errol Spence, Terrence Crawford has never been lower. My optimism for Tank Davis against Ryan Garcia has never been lower. We're just back on that endless hamster wheel of boxing where we get excited about stuff and then we're back down once again. I hate it. I mean, actually, Jamel, let me put this to you first. Like, you've been close with Terrence for a number of years. Sure. You used to be in his camp. What do you think of all this? Like, this is a fight obviously not going to happen in November. And February, even though that's kind of a penciled in date, still not etched in stone at this point. Are you surprised that we're here right now?
No. Like I said, I'm actually close to both Errol and Bud in all this. But as a fight fan, I will say that it's definitely disappointing. It's definitely disappointing because this is probably one of the most anticipated fights, but it seems like it's like one of the most never happening fights ever. When every time we think we're getting close, we get pushed back 10 steps backwards. So it is frustrating, but hopefully, like I said, there's no guarantee in February, but we shall see.
Kevin, you know what's interesting is that, like, guaranteed money, which often holds up big fights, is not the issue here. Like, from what I understand, neither one of these guys is taking a guarantee. They're just taking the big percentages of the purse split. It's something else. There's other ancillary issues that seem to be holding this thing up.
Well, one of the things that I have heard and I think is accurate is the fact that essentially doing that, Crawford wants to be able to see what all the expenses are. And that basically will make him Al Heyman's partner because he has to see all the numbers. And Al Heyman is not going to send to Bud Crawford all how he promotes the fight, what he spends to do this, that, and the other thing. Because, you know, number one, hey, look, if Crawford's pay is dependent upon what they spend, then he's going to not promote the fight. He's going to spend as little as he can so that he gets as much as he can. So I think it's really a financial issue, but it's on the fact that they're both on the come. And I think that's a really issue. The other thing I think is if you look at Crawford's pay history, right? Look at, he made $6 million to fight Sean Porter. Sean was at the end of the line, certainly was no longer the guy that he was, say, in 2017 or 2018. Bud makes $6 million for that, for a fight that sold no tickets. Had basically every ticket in Mandalay Bay given away that night. And now you're going to say, you know, I'm fighting Errol Spence for, you know, it's hard to make that jump. And there's not the kind of money in the fight to pay him what he really would want on a guarantee.
Yeah, there's not, which I think is going to lead to both these guys taking other fights. We know that Keith Thurman is out there as a potential opponent for Errol Spence. I've heard the name David Avanesian floated for Bud Crawford, you know, potentially before the end of the year. I know that Avanesian may have something scheduled, but that's a name to keep an eye on for Bud Crawford before the end of the year. That would be disappointing. I'm equally as disappointed at Tank and Ryan, which I think is going to get scuttled because of broadcast issues. I think they're right there, Jamel, on a deal for weight. It's above 135 pounds, 136, 137. I think they're right there on money, but, you know, there's no broadcast agreement. And Ryan is tied to the zone. Gervonta is tied to Showtime. This feels like one of those things that's going to get derailed because of a broadcaster. And I'm not sure if that makes, I'm not sure which pisses me off more at this point, whether it's Bud and Errol not being able to get past financial issues or Ryan and Tank not being able to overcome broadcast issues.
I mean, I will say this, with the Errol and Bud situation, Crawford situation, I'm actually more worried about the sanctioned body actually, you know, being fed up and actually calling for the mandatory challenges to step up eventually.
Should they?
Yeah, that's my main concern. You know, the mandatory challenges for the WBO and the IBF eventually stepping up and saying, hey, you know, we waited long enough. Now it's our turn. In terms of the, Ryan and Tank, yes, Chris, I agree with you. I feel like as if we live in an era now, it's not so much of the promoters stopping fights, it's more of the networks in which fight the network goes on these days. So it's just a lot to process.
Yeah, it's a lot. And, well, sanctioning bodies, first of all, fuck you, WBC, with your Keith Thurman, you know, as the mandatory. Like, you did you one win in, like, 2 years. All of a sudden, you make your way into the number one spot in their rankings. That, to me, is wild. But, look, I'd love to see the WBO order Virgil Ortiz against Terrence Crawford. That, to me, is a marketable fight. And, look, if you're Terrence Crawford and you're faced with the possibility of having to fight Virgil Ortiz, a fight you'd be a favorite in, but for considerably less money, maybe that pushes you over kind of the goal line there. I don't know. Like, right now, as we're recording this, I don't believe either one of those fights happens. I don't believe.
You know, Chris, I wrote in my column on women's boxing on Saturday. I talked about how the women are showing the men how to do it, right? They're taking big fights. They're looking to unify. They're doing everything. And if you look at like look at Leonard Ellerbe's comments, anytime anybody on social media talks about Tank, you know, they say, why don't you have Tank fight X? Leonard always, the first thing he says every time, he's the bigger draw. He's the bigger. He never talks about the fighting aspect of it, right? And I think that is the problem with boxing. I understand it's a business and I understand the fighters need to, you know, they're risking their lives. They need to make the most money, but it is also a professional sport. And you don't hear Bill Belichick saying, we're not going to play the Chiefs because there's not enough ticket revenue in it, right? They play the Chiefs because that's the game on the schedule. And so you can get the business done if you really want to get the business done. But I think what you see, you know, what PBC is doing, and hey, I want to say this. I wrote a column a couple of years ago saying Al Heyman should be in the Hall of Fame. So I am not saying this as a Heyman hater, but I think if you look at his modus operandi, look at he has done with the welterweights, going back to Mayweather and Pacquiao, he let it play out. They had all those great welterweights. So he let Mayweather fight everybody else until he had no choice but to fight Pacquiao. And now he's done that same thing as Thurman and Crawford, or not Crawford, excuse me, Thurman and Spence and Porter, Danny Garcia. They did their thing and fought each other, right? Now that he, you know, is coming to the end of that, he's at least open to a fight with Crawford. But I think, you know, he's going to get, you know, if you look at him, I think his criticism deserves to be there. He's not one looking to make a fight until he's exhausted all internal options.
Well, Jamel, the problem is in boxing right now is nobody's actually fighting. Like, all these guys are fighting once a year. Like, you can't build a brand. You can't build a legacy. You can't build towards big pay-per-views if you're only fighting once a year. And those one fights, and we're going to get into Wilder and Caleb Plant, like, these are tune-ups that guys are taking. Like, you can't just do your fighting on social media and YouTube. You've got to get in the ring and show, and give people a reason to want to support you.
No, I get it. I get it. It's very frustrating. And even when I point that out on social media, sometimes, you know, they look at me as like, oh, that's the old way of boxing, which is sad because I still believe in, you know, the best fighting the best, obviously. But it seems like you guys pointed out, every time you get on, every time you make a statement for one fighter, you know, their handler or their team will make an argument how this fighter deserves this, who's the A side, who's the bigger draw. And I, over time, you know, it's gotten real old. Like, for the most part, the fans don't really care who's the bigger draw, who brings in the most money. We just want to see the fights.
Exactly.
That's it. But, like, and anytime someone tells you that's the old way of boxing, Jamel, like, point out to them, like this is, I feel like saying this every time, like, a boxing power broker talks to me, like, kind of condescendingly, like, you don't know how tough it is to make a deal. You don't know the business of boxing. Well, boxing in the last 20 years has steadily declined. Like, it's not on the upswing like the NBA, the NFL, all these other major professional sports. Boxing power brokers telling me they know what they're doing is like the captain of the Titanic telling me they know how to navigate. Like, it doesn't make any sequential sense. Like, you are operating in a period where things are going down. Like, right. You know, Roger Goodell can tell me he knows what he's doing with business. Adam Silver can tell me he knows what he's doing in business. People in boxing right now, they can't, because right now boxing is not ascending when it should be, because every time there's a big fight, the world stops. The world would stop if Spence fought Crawford. The world stopped when Fury fought Wilder those last two times. Like, boxing can still draw you in. It just refuses to do so on a consistent basis. All right, that's the end of my opening rant. That was 10 minutes of stuff that was not on our rundown whatsoever. I want to talk, though, about Deontay Wilder this past weekend. Made his return to the ring after a nearly year-long layoff. Ended a two-fight losing streak with a first-round knockout of Robert Helenius. The win was officially a title eliminator for Wilder, which means if Wilder wins one more fight, likely against Andy Ruiz, he could become the mandatory challenger for Tyson Fury's WBC belt. Jamel, I'll start with you. One round, less than 3 minutes, but Wilder looked once again like the Deontay Wilder of old. What was your reaction to his win? Did we learn anything new about Deontay Wilder?
No, I don't think anybody was surprised. I think if anything, we all wanted to see where his mental state was at in terms of everything going on. We knew that he still had the right hand. We all figured that. I mean, especially with him being in with a former sparring partner, somebody he's very familiar with, that he was going to do what he was going to do. I think it's more of his mental aspect after the victory. You know, how does he, you know, carry himself now? You know, where's his mind at? Because people had a lot of doubts after the last two Fury fights, where his head was at and if he still had it. So, I mean, for me, it was still the same old Wilder that we got before the Tyson Fury fights. For me, it's more of you know, where his headspace is at now, going moving into the future. And hopefully we'll see more of that with a fight against a guy like Andy Ruiz.
Kevin, I'll tell you, I like that Wilder came in at 214. It never made any sense to me that he was up in the two high 230s for that last fight. I mean, muscle is heavy. And right. If you're Wilder, you want to be in his nimble condition.
And
as
quickness.
Yeah, like I liked what I saw of him physically. You know, Helenius was what he was, right? He was a credible opponent because he knocked out Adam Kownacki twice. He earned that opportunity. But I think we all saw the writing on the wall. Helenius had been stopped by Gerald Washington. He'd been stopped by Yoan Duapas. He's 38 years old. So I don't think I learned too much new, but it was good to see Wilder still had that kind of hair trigger right hand. And it's good to see him back in the ring. I think he's right that heavyweight boxing is better with him in it.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, he's, you know, he's one of the most exciting fighters of my lifetime, right? I mean, there's no doubt about it because people love knockouts. Remember, what was the, was it the Nike commercials? Chicks love the long ball. Well, boxing fans love the KO, right? That's what, you know, if you can knock people out, people are going to watch and pay attention to you. The thing that I was impressed about with Wilder, and I wrote this before the fight, was, you know, he took such a beating against Fury. Sometimes a body only has so many punches you can take. And for two fights in a row, he got pummeled, right? He dished out, especially in that third fight. I mean, that third fight was one of the great heavyweight fights of our time. But, you know, how does he come back from that? I knew, hey, if he's Deontay Wilder, which it turned out he was, he would do what he did to Robert Helenius. You know, I thought, you know, three or four, maybe. I thought it would take him a little bit to get into it, but that's what Wilder does. But I was so impressed with him because, you know, hey, this is a guy on the downside of his career. He's no longer ascending. He's on the downside. I think he still has some big fights left. And he showed, you know what, to me, when I watched it, and I don't know what you guys think, but I thought, hey, this guy is as hard a puncher as there's ever been in boxing. A lot of times we dismiss the current fighters. In baseball, they don't do that, right? In football, they don't do that. You look at football and the time, the 40 times gets quicker all the time and the weightlifting is better and their athletic ability is better, right? But we don't give boxers that same credit. And we always say, hey, boxers in the 20s or 30s or 40s were better than the boxers today. And I think we have better athletes fighting today. Their training is better. Their conditioning is better. So why wouldn't, you know, Deontay Wilder, we see him destroying people as a puncher. Why wouldn't you call him the greatest puncher ever?
Yeah, he's certainly right up there. And he's got a chance to show it maybe in his next fight against Andy Ruiz, which I think is a terrific fight. Two former heavyweight champions. It seems like a pretty easy fight to put together. Both these fighters are aligned with PBC. That strikes me. If Wilder Helenius is a pay-per-view, then Wilder Ruiz is certainly going to be a pay-per-view, so you can put it on that platform. Jamel, that to me is the fight where we learn something about Deontay Wilder. What do you think of a Wilder Ruiz type of fight?
I think it's good. I think it's good for boxing. I mean, we all know that in the history of the heavyweight division, all you really need is that one comeback win. And then, like I said, we all love knockouts. So that's all it really took. It didn't really matter who Deontay was in there with. As long as he got that, as long as he still proved that he had that knockout power, people are still going to obviously still tune in to see what he can do next. And Andy Ruiz is a man that's proven, you know, he's beaten the odds before. I mean, he dominated his first fight against Anthony Joshua. So why not make it? But as you like to point out, again, this is boxing. I mean, look at the situation between Plant, Benavidez, and others such as Charlo. They're on the same platform, but it still could be sometimes difficult to make these fights that we want to see.
Well, you know what the problem is, Kevin? It's that these guarantees are killing pay-per-views. And I say this with all due respect to fighters like Jamel and fighters that put their lives on the line, but there should not be significant guarantees in pay-per-views. They didn't used to be. Like, fighters should get, you know, 90% of the pay-per-view revenue. They should get almost all of it. I mean, promoters should get enough money to make it worth their while doing it. Networks, of course, will take a small cut, but fighters should take, you know, the big bulk of the pay-per-view revenue. Nowadays, you can't get a pay-per-view done without guaranteeing fighter X 5 million or fighter Y yeah. 1 million. That's what's stalling all these, because if you were just doing straight splits, it would be easy to make Benavidez against Plant. It would be easy to make Wilder against Ruiz. They would step in there and take the money. But I think these fighters know that, you know, there's a pretty good chance that the pay-per-view buys are not going to be significant enough to give them the kind of payday that they're looking for.
Right. And I mean, like, think about it. What does Spence Crawford do? You know, I think 500,000 to 600,000.
Yeah.
Right. That's a fight that talent wise should be 1.5 million, right? Because these two unbelievably great fighters, you know, arguably the two best fighters in the world, at worst, two of the five best fighters in the world. that should be a fight, and they're both undefeated, they're both in their prime. That should be a fight that breaks pay-per-view records, but we know it won't. You know, part of it is the way both guys are personally. Like they don't promote and they don't do that type of thing, you know, especially Bud. You know, Bud's a lot more difficult and surly with the media, and it's not as available. You know, Errol's is available to the media, but he certainly is not like a colorful guy that, you know, gets you going. And so, you know, there's nothing that gets them other than their fighting. And in order for a pay-per-view to be a success, you have to draw in other than the hardcore boxing fans. You know that. And when you can't get the hardcore boxing fans because they don't hear about these guys because they don't get themselves out there in the media, I think that's a problem. So, you know, but let me just say, add one thing in here. You're talking about Andy Ruiz, and I wrote a column ripping Andy Ruiz's management before he fought Luis Ortiz and saying that they should have been fighting Wilder then. I think the next fight for Wilder now, Ortiz is good, but I want to see a Wilder Joshua. And why not that fight next? Eddie Hearn seems open to it at this point. Why not put Wilder versus Joshua next? To me, you know, the two big guys, I think Joshua has a better resume than Ruiz. You know, they're 1-1 in their fights, but Joshua's fought a lot better opposition than Andy. Andy had that one win over Anthony. But then if you put Joshua and Wilder and say you put it over, well, you don't want to put it in the UK because that would be difficult time-wise. Mm. I think that's a massive fight.
I would love to see AJ back in the U.S. to try to, I mean, it's been, what, 3 years now since.
Yeah, put him in the garden again and have them fight.
Back, go back to the garden.
Oh, the garden might be his own bad luck charm.
But you got to, like, if you're AJ, wouldn't you want to come back to the U.S. at some point? You can't, like, end your career with your only fight in the U.S. being knocked out by Andy Ruiz. Like that would just, if I was AJ, that would sit with me. That would bother me some. But look, if it is Ruiz, we talked about Wilder's weight being down. I want to see fat Andy Ruiz, like as big as he needs to be going into that fight, because
whoa. Now he was 283 pounds.
Not that fat. No, like, but like 260, Jamel, 260, 270. Because I mean, you guys have seen this too. It feels like skinny Andy Ruiz is a little bit too chinny. Like skinny Andy Ruiz against Chris Areola, I mean, got caught.
I mean, but his speed and athleticism is there. But I get what you're saying. He might have to put a little bit more on in terms of taking those heavyweight punches. But I mean, we don't want to see him. I don't even want to see him at 270. I want to see him where he's still athletic and can use his hand speed. It was still entertaining to fight. But I get what you're saying, Chris. I really do.
Yeah, the hand speed's always going to be there. It's kind of some of the other things as well. But
Wilder is really quick too.
Yeah.
And a fast guy like Wilder hitting you and you're slow because you put on 25 extra pounds. I think that's bad news.
That's a problem. That's a problem for sure. All right. I want to talk a little about women's boxing. The all women's boxing card headlined by Clarissa Shields' grudge match with Savannah Marshall was by all accounts a smashing success, selling out the O2 Arena, drawing an audience of more than 2 million, that according to Sky Sports. This is the second monster women's headline card this year, following up the Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano show last April at the Garden. That fight did an audience of 1.5 million on DAZN. Women's boxing is growing fast, fellas. Sure. It really is. And this might seem crazy, but you know, could we get to a point in the next few years where the biggest and most compelling fights just in totality per year are being put on by women? Jamel, is there a chance we could get into that territory?
I mean, yeah. I mean, most people, they won't like it or admit to it, but for the last couple of years, we've been seeing that. I mean, look back as far as Sunisa and versus Marlene. That was a hell of a good fight, and it was for three, and it was 3 minute round. So the more women actually fight and strive for for these moments, I believe they'll get them. I mean, even like I said, looking back at that fight, they act for 3 minute rounds, and they got 3 minute rounds, and it's actually a very entertaining fight. And like you mentioned, when you put in Serrano, Taylor, Clarissa, and Savannah, at least for the most part, in terms of the women, they're making the fights that the fans are asking for, and they're not doing a lot of back and forth on social media. Yes, we've seen Bumgarner and Mayer, they did a lot of social media back and forth, but at the same time, they still got in the ring and fought each other in the end. Nowadays, you see a lot, especially with the men's lightweight division, you see a lot of these guys just constantly talking, but you don't see no pen on paper.
Yeah, Kevin, that's a great point. Women consistently make the big fights, unification fights, the fights that we want to see, whereas on the men's side, we're often left disappointed. And we look at the depth of talent now, from the top ranks with Clarissa Shields to the lower weights with Sunisa Strada and everything in between. More talent's coming. Like, this is the beginning. Look at what it was 5 years ago, where it is now. 5 years from now, there are going to be even more talented women in the game. And these women are fighting each other. They're doing it off pay-per-view. And oftentimes, they're doing it in an entertaining way. I mean, not every woman is a power puncher.
And they're filling up arenas, though, too, as well.
Yes, that's a big thing, too. MSG was full.
Well, not here. Not here.
MSG.
Taylor Serrano did, MSG, but that's... You know what? I want to answer you guys by saying, are you fucking crazy? It's going to be bigger than men's boxing.
I wouldn't say
it's not. But that doesn't mean it doesn't.
In terms of like popularity, it's catching up. Because, like I said, over the weekend, you've seen a lot of people more excited for the women's card than the two other cards, in my opinion.
Well, Jamel, I love the women's card, and I wrote a column after that fight just praising the card and praising what women are doing. And I give all of them credit, and I mentioned about 10 women in the thing, Jessa McCaskill. I mean, so many, you know, of the women fighters, I love the attitude that they have and what they are doing. But to remotely suggest it's ever going to be bigger than men's boxing, no way. And I mean, that's like saying the WNBA in a couple of years is going to overtake the NBA, right? It's not happening.
No, the problem is my argument with you there, and I don't necessarily disagree with you that men's boxing will always have a leg up on women's boxing, but the NBA would never allow the WNBA or give them the opening because the Lakers have to play the Warriors. The Celtics have to play the Knicks. Like, you know, these matchups are going to consistently happen in the NBA. Right. If we get more years like we've had this year where there have been a handful of quality men's fights, quality men's cards, but too often we're left with A-side versus D-side, and that's not the kind of matchup that will grow the sport.
I love what's going on in boxing now from the standpoint. I've written several times in recent months about a golden age of boxing. We have so many great young fighters on both the men's and the women's side. And we didn't mention Jerron Ennis before, but look at all this nonsense at welterweight, and we don't have Jerron Ennis and Virgil Ortiz fighting, right? I mean, that's just a crime. These guys, we want to see those guys.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Big fights and significant fights, and it's almost like they have to wait for Spence and Crawford to get their business done till they get their time up. So I love what is going on in boxing, but hey, let's look at women's boxing and what is going on. How many promoters are really committed to women's boxing? I would say two: Matchroom, Eddie Hearn, and Lou DiBella. Who else? Top Rank signed Sunisa, and that was their second woman, and they had to call their other woman to see if it was okay if they signed her. Right, Top Rank, I think, is the leading promoter in the sport overall. And I think if Top Rank made a commitment to women, that would be huge. But they have not done that. Golden Boy, you know, blew it, you know, with their women. They're not really doing it. There's not this commitment to women from the promoters, and it has to start there. And I love what's going on in women's boxing. I think it's gives Clarissa Shields credit. We haven't mentioned her name too much here. But this woman is, look what she's doing, going out there and fighting three divisions, winning undisputed, what, two of them, and unified in the third. I mean, it's amazing what she's doing. And she's setting the tone for her peers. We don't see that in boxing, but I think it's a long way away from catching up.
Well, go ahead,
Carol. I get what you're saying, though, Kevin. But, and I mean, everything you said was correct in terms of not enough big powerhouses are pushing, you know, the subject here. But at the same time, with that being said, when these women still put on they still make these fights happen, people are still tuning in, and despite the little backing that they may have, they still make a huge impact over this weekend, and people are still talking about it. People are looking for a rematch even between Mayhem, Bumgarner, and even others are now, from what I've seen on my end, looking forward to Sunisa's shot of making her return. And she almost been out for almost a year, but people are still wanting to see where she's at, how she looks, and what she can do from here moving forward. So I believe at the end of the day, it starts somewhere. And yes, it's not where we would love for it to be, but you have to start the foundation somewhere. And I believe that women's boxing is heading in the right direction.
Well, I agree it's heading in the right direction. My only disagreement is with Chris's contention about surpassing men's boxing.
I pointed out that I don't think it's going to ever eclipse it. But it will continue to narrow the gap. By the way, with Sunisa Estrada returning November 12th, you could point out that fight in Las Vegas, most of the tickets being bought ain't getting bought by Genebet fans. That's for sure. Like he ain't selling tickets. The middleweight champion of the world is not selling tickets to that fight, or at least one of the middleweight champions of the world. There were three cards last weekend. One was headlined by the undisputed lightweight champion. One was headlined by the former heavyweight champion. And to me, the most interesting fight that weekend was the co-main event of the women's card with Michaela Mayer and Alicia Baumgartner. The second most interesting fight was Clarissa Shields against Savannah Marshall. Like, on a weekend where the undisputed lightweight champion was in action and the former heavyweight champion was in action, the most compelling fights to me that interested me the most were the two women's fights.
I love them. And I sat there. You know what I did on Saturday? This is how much I was into it. I sat down and I watched the women's card. I wrote a recap on Baumgartner Mayer. I wrote a recap on Shields and Marshall. I wrote a column on women's boxing Shields Marshall after that fight. I wrote a recap on Devin Haney. I wrote a recap on the UFC, which was a women's fight. And then I wrote a recap and a column on Deontay Wilder. So what was that? Seven stories that I did in a little period of time. So I agree with you that those women's fights were absolutely worthy of it. And I love what the women are doing. And I think that I think promoters should invest more money in women. And I do think, as we have discussed, that the fact that the women are having success is going to breed future success for the women. But here's one thing, Chris, let me throw this at you and see what you guys think. Like, I think Sunisa Estrada's debut for Top Rank is a big moment for her and for women's boxing, because now a very elite women's boxer is going to join the biggest promotional company in the sport. So why put it on a night when there's a major UFC card, right? That is going to be a significant detriment to them in terms of the ratings. And I know we don't have a huge crossover, but I think they should have set Sinise's first fight where she had the stage to herself and she was the main event. I think if they did that, that was Top Rank showing a commitment to women's boxing and to this fighter in particular. And I think that should have happened.
I'll be interested to see what happens next year, because however you want to define it, women's boxing closed the gap a little bit with men. Still far behind, but it closed the gap a little bit.
Agreed.
As we look ahead to next year, I can see women's boxing closing it a little bit more, because we're probably going to get Taylor Serrano 2 at some point. We're probably going to get Alicia Baumgartner unification, maybe Alicia Baumgartner against Katie Taylor at some point before the end of the year. Maybe we get a rematch between Clarissa Shields and Savannah Marshall, or we see Clarissa Shields become this like British Slayer and stays over in the UK and fights Natasha Jonas or fights Terry Harper and these other 154s that have joined the ranks there. Like, these are big cards, Kevin, that we can probably count on. Whereas in men's boxing, I don't know what we can count on next year. Like, can you name one big fight that you can count on next year besides Fury Usyk? I'm counting on. That's going to happen. Those two want to fight each other. But other than that, I can't think of anything at this point.
I'm really disappointed in Fury, right? And why the hell is he fighting Derek Chisora? Terrible fight. He's already destroyed him twice. Now we're doing it a third time. And I don't understand what the nonsense he's been doing is. He's retired. He's under-retired. He's putting deadlines on AJ, putting deadlines on Usyk. And now he comes up with this fight, which is a weak fight. And it's a who cares fight. So the women are totally opposite that. You know, what did Clarissa Shields say after the fight? You know, ask if she would give Marshall a rematch. She says, well, if the public wants it, I'll do it. That's the answer. That is the answer. And that's what women say all right. The time. And I think, you know, we're going to have a lot more unification fights. You know, we could have at that flyweight level, we could have, you know, a junior flyweight and a flyweight, you know, undisputed champions then fighting each other, right? I mean, that is a possibility for the second half of next year. Hey, why not? Why not invest in that and put more money in it? I think the promoters are the hold up here.
Yeah, I'd be all for running that whole women's boxing card back in Detroit. Like, do that at like Little Caesars Arena or the MGM Grand out there, something big, and run that whole card back, because you've got Clarissa, Alicia, run it all back. Everybody gets rich. Everybody's interested once again. I'd be on board with something like that. Football season is heating up, and now is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Because right now, new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's free bets back if your first bet doesn't win. Just sign up with the promo code BOXING. I've been betting a little bit on the NFL this year, a lot about boxing, as you guys know, every single week. And I only use FanDuel to make these bets. FanDuel has a ton of betting options for each game. You can combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same game parlay. With live betting, you'll get updated odds on games that have already started. The app is safe, secure, and super easy to use. Get paid your winnings fast. So sign up today with the promo code BOXING for your no sweat first bet. Make every moment more this season with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. I want to get Jamel's take on this. This wasn't what I wanted to talk about, but Kevin brought it up. I couldn't possibly give a shit about Fury Chisora. Like, Fury tried to make the Usyk fight. Like, so I give him credit for that. He tried to make that fight. Usyk was the one that says, I'm done for the rest of the year. The Joshua fight was never really going to happen because super fights are not put together in like 3 weeks. That, like, right. They're going to fight. If they do fight, it's going to be in like Abu Dhabi or Jeddah for a kajillion dollars at some point in 2023. Like, that was obvious. And if he's really determined to fight in December, like, Kevin, you answer this first, then Jamel, you weigh in. Like, Sure. Like was he supposed to, like, fight Zhang Zhilei or, like, some, like, who was he supposed to fight? Like, if he's not fighting Derek Chisora, like, who would you rather see him in? That makes sense. Understanding this is a stay busy fight, and he's not going to take on Joe Joyce before he's going to face Alexander Usyk.
Well, when you were setting out that question, you know, you talked about what I think the problem with boxing is. You said the super fight was Joshua and Fury, and then Usyk was a good fight. Usyk is the freaking unified champion, And that's not the big fight. And I think that, you know, in the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, the team sports, winning counts and being successful counts. And people want to see the teams that win. And in boxing, it's so much different than that. Hey, yes, you have to win, but you have to have the personality and you have to have that. Again, I say this. Hey, look, they were close. Tyson's the one manipulating all this stuff, right? Usyk was saying is, I don't want to fight this year. But he could have fought him in January or February, right? Could, you know, give him a little bit of a break. But Tyson was being a bully. Usyk had just had a big fight with Joshua. Give him a little time off, and then he'll fight him. Or he puts the, you know, the deadline. Hey, what did Eddie Hearn and Joshua say? They were willing to agree to the terms and get the fight. But there's just little nuance to get it done, and then they couldn't do it. Well, I just think Tyson is to blame, and I think is. I'm not sure what he was doing with all this craziness. You know, he's retired, then he's coming back, then he's retired again and all this. But I think the fight to make was Usyk, and you didn't have to fight December 3rd.
No, I mean, Kevin, you were spot on with that. Honestly, I was just tired with the back and forth between Tyson and his decision for the last couple of months and what he was going to do. I mean, most of us already assumed that he wasn't going to retire, but when he did come back saying that he wanted to fight Anthony Joshua, I thought it would make sense, especially for British boxing. Obviously, it would also make better sense to fight a guy in Usyk, who's also, you know, the unified world champion, to where they could have an undisputed world champion. But right now, yeah, nobody wants to see the Chisora fight. Absolutely not. I don't know. Maybe, again, like Chris said earlier, we just can't predict what's going to happen in the new year, because every time we get the talk, so we get the high hopes of having a big fight, we always get thrown something that we totally didn't ask for at all.
I tell you what though, Jamel, like Fury Chisora will sell out O2 Arena or something like that. It will, like, because Chisora will like throw a table at him and like they'll be interested in it like before the fight, and like the people will be talked into Chisora having half a chance, and it'll do a decent pay-per-view buy. They'll sell it in arena. And I just think it's fine for a fight that Fury just wants to keep active in doing. And Kevin, I think he's going to fight Usyk like before April. Probably want to do it outdoors anyway, if you can do a big crowd. So you want to push it deeper into the spring as you can. I the consternation over this Chisora fight is a little bit bizarre to me. It's like they're the boxing purists out there that want to see like, you know, what's he gonna do? Fight Jared Anderson? Stay busy? Fight? Like what? He's just trying to stay active in the ring, and I have no problem with him fighting Alexander Usyk. All right, one more thing for you guys. We mentioned Devin Haney beats George Kambosos. To Devin's enormous credit, goes to Australia twice, wins the undisputed championship, makes a whole bunch of money, and now he's free to do effectively whatever he wants, whether it is Vasily Lomachenko or a move to 140 pounds. Jamel, I want to ask you this. What's the weigh-in for Haney against Kambosos? Haney's not 135 pounds. Like, Haney was bone dry at that weigh-in. And he's been, now he's going to get, you know, nudged in the direction of Lomachenko. I know that's a fight Haney has wanted for a number of years. Yeah. But what would you do? Given, like, you saw Haney in the ring. You saw him the day before. Yes, he's still a young guy, just 23 years old. But I don't know, like Teofimo Lopez, it's always stuck with me. One thing Teofimo Lopez said in the aftermath of the loss to Kambosos was he should have dropped the belts and moved up to 140 before then. Now that may have been Monday morning quarterbacking because he lost, but if you're Devin Haney, don't you have to consider kind of moving up one fight too early rather than one fight too late? Because if you don't come in at 100% against Lomachenko, he's gonna carve you.
Been a long night, yeah. Of course. If anything, with me first, I would tell if he does decide to stay at 135 pounds, he definitely needs to get a nutritionist for starters. He can't do it the old fashioned way he's been doing it, because obviously, if you look at his weigh in the first Kambosos fight to the second one, completely different character, completely different, you know, person stepping on that scale. And you're right. Maybe it is time for him to move up. But if he really still wants, because like I said, the cards are in his hands. If he really wants to say, hey Bob, I want this fight, then he has to make the smart decision of bringing someone else on his team to help him cut that weight safely and, you know, and naturally. But if you feel like it's time to move up, then I don't think many are going to hold him against that. Hey, it's time to move up. You are a big lightweight. Maybe it's time to see what's up north at 140 pounds.
Kevin, it's not like there aren't great options for Haney at 140 either. You can argue that 140 is one of the deepest divisions in all of boxing now. Heavy at the top with Teofimo, Ryan Garcia's there at the moment, Regis Progre. Those titles, Josh Taylor's still got one, but that's going to go at some point as well. It might just make sense for Haney to move up, take a medium-level fight at 140 to get used to it, and then summer of 2023, look for that Teofimo fight, look for that Ryan Garcia fight, look for that Progre fight, and start taking big fights there.
I think Devin Haney is going to be the guy that benefits a lot because he has so many options. You know, you look at lightweight, if he stays at lightweight, you know, you got Shakur Stevenson there. What a fight that would be, him and Shakur Stevenson. Loma, as you said, you know, if he could put Tank Davis together, you know, we know what probably will happen there. But, you know, I'll just throw it out that Tank Davis is the biggest draw. But, there is a lot of talent in both divisions, right? So he has a lot to pick from. And hey, I agree with what Jamel said. You know, you don't hold it against him if he decides he can't make it. And I also agree, Jamel made the perfect point. And I think this is probably where he'll go, is get a nutritionist in camp, have somebody keep him on point. Because he's a big dude. What is he, like 5'8 and a half, 5'9?
Wide
and,
shoulders, you know, too.
Pretty broad shoulders and everything. So, you know, he's not going to be a lightweight for the long term. But if you can get that big fight, and I think Loma would qualify as a big fight, even though Loma's maybe not what he was a couple of years ago, Loma's still damn good. And that would be a big fight for him to then ride off into the sunset. You've defended your undisputed title a second time against a really good opponent, and you go up to 140, and you'll be the guy that everybody wants to see fight. They'll be calling you out. 147s will be calling him out, right? I mean, he's going to have a lot of options. I think Devin Haney is going to make a lot of money in the next couple of years.
Yeah. You know, Jamel and those top-ranked guys love those perfecting athletes people. They love them.
First thing I thought about. Athletes,
folks. Yeah, they swear by those perfecting athletes, folks. You know, Jamel, you know what I also love about Devin Haney, and I've told him this. Like, he's not aligning himself with anybody. I mean, look, he started his career fighting on Showbox as an independent. He signs with Eddie Hearn. He makes a whole bunch of money. Doesn't get the fights he's looking for, so he signs with Top Rank. And now he's got one more fight left with Top Rank. Maybe it's against Lomachenko. Maybe it's against Teofimo Lopez. And then he can make another choice. Like, he can elect to go back and do a new deal with Top Rank. He can elect to align himself maybe with Golden Boy even to try to get a Ryan Garcia fight. Like, I love that approach. Like, this, it's like the approach, and Kevin knows this, that Sugar Ray Leonard took back in the day. Sugar Ray Leonard didn't align himself with anybody. He just was like, you know what? I'm going to take the fights I want to take. I mean, too often it feels like fighters are just so deeply loyal to promoters. And the reality is, like, if Devin Haney had lost to Kambosos, Top Rank would have cut him. Like, it just, like, promoters will just cut you if you lose. I mean, you've experienced some of this, Jamel. Like, you know, if you lose, all of a sudden you're in a tough situation with your promoter. So sure. I love that Devin is operating this way because it opens up all the options for himself at multiple weight classes. It allows him to go to the location or the promoter that will pay you the most amount of money, and it will give you opportunities to burnish your legacy. I mean, Devin wants to be a pound-for-pound guy right now. I'm not sure that he is, but he can get there because he's got the talent.
Definitely.
And now he can go wherever he wants to go and fight those big fights.
Agreed. Agreed. I like how he's playing it. Like you said, he has everything that he wants and in the palm of his hand. If he wants to move up north for this last fight, then so be it. He wins there. He can come back to the table, renegotiate with Top Rank, go back to talk with Eddie Hearn again. And like you said, or even speak with Golden Boy about a Ryan Garcia fight. Because, you know, Ryan Garcia is also looking to make a big fight because it's about that time. So I'm pretty sure he's feeling the pressure, and he needs that name on his resume as well. So, but Devin Haney is definitely in a good position, not only to make the most money, but the best fights for his legacy as well.
Yeah, I love the potential for Devin Haney at 140 and eventually 147 in all the years to come. Kevin Ioli, Yahoo Sports, Jamel Herring, former 130-pound champion. Also, ESPN broadcaster. When's your next fight, Jamel? Doing a great job.
Next fight, I'll luckily be honored to be ringside against Lomachenko against Jermaine Ortiz while I last fought. But no, I'm actually looking forward to that. I'll be back then for the at the Garden. And so I'm actually happy to to see some live boxing again up close.
Well, actually, now that we're talking to you, you give Jermaine Ortiz a shot in that fight. The pride of Worcester, Massachusetts, by the way, as a Boston guy.
Oh, yeah, I have nothing against Ortiz, but I feel like it's never an easy night for anyone against Vasily Lomachenko. You have pretty much almost perfect with a guy like that, with a guy like Lomachenko, especially if you look at the mindset of it, of a fighter. If Lomachenko looks at it as, listen, if I get past Ortiz, I potentially have a shot to become undisputed world champion, which he wants, what he craves for. I believe that Lomachenko is very dangerous and not taking no for an answer coming up. But again, he's not the same, like you point out, he's not the same Lomachenko as he was 3 years ago. And Ortiz is a young, hungry fighter. So we'll have to wait and see. But of course, you have to side with Vasily Lomachenko on that night of the fight.
Yeah, coming off a long layoff to Lomachenko as he returns from Ukraine to get back into the boxing game. Fellas, great stuff. Good to talk to you. Thanks for joining me here on the show.
No problem, Chris.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Jamel Herring and Kevin Ioli for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. And I'll see you next week.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.